Now, nobody likes the feeling of being usurped or replaced, whether it's in the workplace or in the affections of a loved one. It makes us super careful about how we tell our children, for example, that a new sibling is on the way. And I'm going to confess to outright bribery here. When my second child was on the way, and I had a conversation with somebody about how to ease the arrival from the perspective of my daughter, who was 2.5 at the time, somebody said to me the best thing to do is to have the baby arrive with a present. We went with it. So her little baby brother arrived, and when Jenna came to the hospital to meet him for the first time, she was presented not only with the little squishy worm that was her brother, but also a beautifully wrapped, ribboned purple box, inside of which were a few of her favorite things, some jelly tots, a little book, and a coloring in pad. And that was told, she was told, this is the present that your brother bought for you when he arrived. And it worked a treat. I don't care if it was outright bribery. It worked. She was smitten the minute she met him. And I don't know if it was just because she was going to be smitten anyway or if the box played a role, but it worked for us is all I'm saying. Why am I talking about bribing and finding ways of easing new arrivals into the house? Well, because we want to talk about it from an animal's perspective today. Not only welcoming a new child, but also the concept of welcoming a second animal, whether it's another puppy, a different species entirely. What do you do if you have an older dog that's been there for some time that thinks it is the sole owner of the roost and knows its place in the pack and doesn't like the concept of a newcomer arriving to disrupt things? Is there anything we can do as the head of that pack to ease the situation for them? It's a question we're going to put to animal behaviorist John Fall. Always a pleasure to have you with us, John. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
You're always welcome, Pippa. Pippa, this is the classic case, isn't it? You know, where in the case of the dog or the cat, you get ready to leave as you normally would. They have no idea you're going to pick up a puppy or a kitten. And you head off the door and the dog waves goodbye and says, happy hunting and bring back the best bits for me. So as far as the dog and the cat is concerned, you're out to procure food. But you arrive back with competition. And the dog looks at you and says, whoa, hang on a second here. I sent you for food, not competition for food. What is this? Whose is it? What's it doing here? And what's its impact going to be on me? And that's a pretty much immediate reaction. Mm. And it's to an older dog, but it must be kept in mind, Pippa, at all times. Wolves put human beings to shame when it comes to rearing their young and accepting their young into an existing pack. It is one of the most delightful things you will ever see, Pippa. Mm-hmm. At 6 weeks old, when it should be, when you get a puppy and bring them in to introduce them to your existing dog, make it between 6 and 8 weeks old, because their approach behavior, Pippa, is very strong, very powerful. And these are laws set out by Professor Michael Fox, when he said at this time, they will solicit from all the other members of the group around them the same curious reaction as they present, a mirror reaction. Mm-hmm. Therefore, creating an immediate bond and a link between all involved. And it's very important that if we bring that puppy away from a litter, it's coming to a brand new environment. So what we need to do is we need to make sure that this is a very positive experience. So I recommend to people that if you're living anywhere near in 20 km of the breeder, go to the breeder at about 3 weeks old, that's when puppy's eyes and ears are open, and take a swab scent, an anal genital swab scent of the existing animals within your environment. And that then gets given to the breeder, and the puppies are going on solids, and before they get their solids, they sniff this, and animals see the world they live in through their nose, a gland called the Jacobson's, and it chemically defines the who of what laid it, age, sex, size, weight. Okay. So when puppy would sniff that, it would go, okay, that's an adult male dog, XYZ. And then it receives food, and it then associates the food coming from the adult dog. So we're creating a link. Those that share food together, Pippa, it's a very sacred thing. Mm-hmm. So we're creating a link between the two parties, a bit like your child when your baby son was born. So what we're doing is we're taking the swab from the puppy back to the adult dogs. All adult dogs love Druravos, it's just a thing. And if you were to take that Druravos and the swab of the puppy, stroke baby, who's just been born in the hospital, and you bring that back home and you allow the adults smell it, and then they get some Druravos, and you repeat the exercise, they're making a very positive view of who it is and what it is and why it was they got what they got. And when they do that, that again reinforces the link. So that when both parties are brought together, they're not strangers to each other. You don't arrive home with a puppy and your dog says, competition, oh God, I'm in trouble. Mm. It sniffs and it goes, hang on a minute. I know you. Every time I saw you, the guy with the big red hat ran over and gave me 500 rand. God, I really love you. Won't you come here every morning? So they're then positively reinforced on the visual, on the olfactory sense before the visual sense. But bringing puppies, young dogs, into an older dog's environment is a perfectly natural thing, Pippa, because they rear their own young. And my, do they do a good job on this, Pippa. They are so patient. You know, the Pippa animals never, ever punish their young. Ever. Hmm. It does not exist. They will reprimand if necessary, but they will never use punishment as a means of teaching. It is a patience game, and it is recognition and a realization that these are indeed, as with our own, investments into the future, and their success invariably will become our success. But there are certain things that older dogs cannot do. If you're bringing a puppy into an older dog environment or a baby who's going to crawl, the first thing we need to teach the older dog, so it doesn't have to get up and move every time it sees puppy coming or baby coming, we take the puppy to the older dog or the baby to the older dog, and we show the dog food, and the dog thinks, hey, lovely, we're going to get food. And then you get the baby's hand, the puppy, and you just pull an ear, and you pop a piece of food into the dog's mouth. You pull a tail, you pop a piece of food, and you pull a paw, pop a piece of food in. And the dog starts looking at the other entity's child stroke puppy and goes, hang on a second. Does this mean that if I get my ear pulled, it's going to cause you to give me food and it's in the presence of that? Yeah, I can deal with that. That's great. I love that idea. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And if you repeat that over a couple of days, puppies are natural play objects. That's how they learn. So they're going to want to play, and the elderly will tolerate them, but the elderly are there to teach them what they can and cannot do. Grandparents, yes, are very kind and benign, but because the parents are bloody idiots incapable of rearing children, it is the grandparents who step in and they play the little disciplinary roles. What's allowed? What's normal? What's abnormal? And they learn that very, very quickly. And because they're learning for something that's genetically linked to them, they've got no problem with it. So that the young, whether it's a puppy, whether it's a child, will learn very quickly that it is this that allows it to be in the presence of the dog. And if the dog whimpers, then the child is picked up and the child is taken away. The child does not want to be removed from something that is warm and fluffy, and it can use its little cling reflex on. These are all very important things to both parties. But it's equally critical that when an elder dog decides to reprimand a younger dog, because a pack of wolves do not tolerate thugs, Pippa. It's not on. So that when they reprimand, it will be vocal, it will be loud, it will be very impressive, but it will have no backup of force, none. These are ritualizations of a display of a reprimand. And of course, puppy will give a big squeal. Baby will get a big fright. But it's very, very important that there is no punishment meted out to the adult dog in the guise of, that's a puppy or that's a baby, you should not do that. In the case of a puppy, it's talking to a member of its own species. In the case of the baby, you never leave a child in the presence of a dog ever on its own. I don't care how good you think your dog is. That is not done by their own kind, and it should not be done by us. So supervision on our behalf with children is critical. But puppies, not so much so. It's better that we stand back and just kind of go, okay, there's no harm going to come to this. Puppy's going to get told that that's not tolerated. Puppy's going to remember that, and it's going to lay it down in its behavior pattern that will display later on in life. Mm. Exercise. Puppies love to play. And they love to get out, and as they begin to develop, they do need exercise. But elder dogs are not capable of this. So if you've got an older dog, please don't think that, hey, listen, look, old Sparky in the corner, he'll act as a playmate. He won't. His value is that if you're leaving puppy and you're going out, that's where his value is. Because it's one thing having a playmate when everything is safe, but if you leave and there's a little insecurity, puppy needs something to go to, and that will be the elder dog. And they will go and curl up beside the elder dog, and the elder dog, like all good grandparents, know exactly when it's time to pick up a child and give it a hug and pat in the back, and there we are, so you tell it's all off to sleep, now let's go. And they're positive for both parties involved. With the cat, it's a little different, Pippa.
Yeah.
Because Kitty is pre-programmed in its own kind. That mom will keep, they don't form packs. They can form colonies, but not packs. So that when they get to about five and a half months old and does the onset puberty, and dad smells testicular testosterone off the boys and mom estrogen, progesterone and preovulative testosterone off the girls, they get sent on their way and they're told, go west, take the gene with you. So when a baby arrives in a cat environment, or a kitten arrives in a cat environment, or a puppy arrives in that environment, Kitty immediately feels threatened, because all of a sudden there's a switch gone off in the brain that says, okay, you're after, because they do indeed think that you bore these little things, you know, they didn't fall out of the sky or come out from under a hen of cabbage. So that they think that they are indeed yours, and it's their signal to move out. It's critically important that at that period, that you, the type of attention you give to your resident older cat is retarded back into the neonative state. Pick it up by the back of the neck and watch. Its legs will curl up, its tail will curl up, its head will pop to the side, its little tongue will pop out, and it's very amusing, eh? But they become little kittens, and then you start rubbing your scent onto them from underneath your armpits, and you're saying to them, I don't want you going anywhere. And if you do, at least they'll smell me off you and think I'm you, and they won't mess. But I'm not, I don't want you taking that chance. I'm going to just cover you anyway. Simple little things like that. Spitting into their food dish. Very important for puppy and for kitten. Because what we're doing is we're saying, hey, listen, this is what we kill here. That's safe food. The elder dog, when puppy's going to be on four feeds a day, it's very important that the elder dog is given a little bit of food beforehand. And anyway, Pippa, like us, or well, me, those of us who are walking out of the other, the wrong side of the forest, we need more protein, not less of it. And we need more carbohydrates, not less of them, because our muscle tissue doesn't last as long as it used to. So it needs a bit of a helping hand. So it's that you monitor the diet, and you look at the puppy's diet as a growing element, and the adult's dog is needing that, though it's not growing but maintenance. But they would both, you know, they'll twig you onto each other. And it's good, because then there's no precedent being showed toward puppy.
John, if I may interrupt, there's an interesting email in from Debbie with a specific situation that she'd like your advice on, if I may. And just a reminder, we can take one or two calls or voice notes as well, if you have questions. John, Debbie's description is, I have a stable pack of three older adults, all of whom happily know their place. But since they are getting old, my husband and I would like to add a puppy. We had babysat the puppy of a friend for a weekend, and our dogs absolutely hated the experience. Her concern is, how does she bring a puppy into that environment where she's worried about it getting hurt potentially?
First thing I would say is that's the best for human behavior, first and foremost, because dogs don't cause dog fights, humans do. And if the puppy's brought into the environment, the puppy would be held up in the air, and puppy's looking down at all the other adults. And they don't, I mean, that doesn't happen, you know. A female wolf does not pick up her pups on her forepaws and stand on her back legs and look down at everybody else. That does not happen. It's very important that when this interface starts, it starts when you walk in with puppy held by the back of the neck. Mom behavior. This is very important that mom does this. Mom takes puppy by the back of the neck, she can pop her hand under the bum, and she marches in and she places that puppy on the ground. She sits with that puppy, and she's making a declaration to all the rest of them. There's none of me jumping back into my womb here. And instead of getting boxes with presents, you get the nappies, you get the talcum powder, and of course you're not going to go back into nappies. You're too big. That's too small. You're too big. Well done. And that would be critical. So that they're calm. Yawn, blink, stretch out your arms. What they do to chill out, or tell another wolf to chill out, hey, relax, this is okay. Go through the positive reinforcement of having that swab. Wolves aren't stupid. They know that they only share food with each other. If this scent is coming from this puppy and that dog is getting built on, I guarantee you that dog is in absolute love with that puppy. So it's about how you present puppy into the environment before puppy arrives, and then what you do with puppy when you walk in, hold puppy by the back of the neck, you're making a statement to everybody. Anybody touches or looks crooked at my child, they will pay the consequence. And don't get confused by what is respectful behaviour. People say the dog's nose is out of joint. He's not. He's backing off and he's going, okay, I recognise that I'm no longer the priority here because my gene tells me that that's the future and I got to take a step back. And they will do so willingly because they are wolves before they are dogs. Hmm. And wolves, they're in dog's clothing. So if that procedure was followed, that puppy will be willingly and happily accepted to that.
Thank you so much for the advice, Debbie. I hope that's going to be helpful to you and good luck. Let's go to the lines to say hello to Rini on the line from Brooklyn. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Pippa, and thank you for your guest. Pippa, my question is, I've got a 13-year-old Maltese terrier, and I take her walking every day, and she comes in the car with me every day, and for the past few weeks, I've suddenly discovered that she's been digging holes in my garden. Is that normal, or is there perhaps something going on that I should know about?
Could be a couple of things. It could be a mole. It could be a rodent of a different type, and she will hear the activity of that underneath the ground, and she will try to dig it out. You said she's 13 years old.
Yes.
As we get along and the further we walk out of the forest, things come back to us, and we try and do them, and we even engage in them without realizing that they were things that we did a long time ago and we should have left them there. And it's a type of senility. It's a type of regressive behavior. Okay. I would definitely tell you use no punishment. I mean, you don't sound like you would anyway, but no punishment would be used in the control of that, because if that dog gets a smack for doing that, you don't, and even if you catch the dog in the act, it's still not going to understand it, because dogs don't understand human gardening habits.
Okay.
I would ask yourself, is there anything changed in your environment that might have raised the anxiety of that dog?
Not at all. I've lived in the same house for 24 years, and she's been with me in the same house for 14 years, 13 years.
I would say to you that what you need to do is you need to contact a dietitian. And what you need to do is just have explored the idea of a little thing called blood plasma urea. Ammonia. It's a neurotoxin, and it's a problem with the liver. And I'm not saying it's terminal or anything like that, but you should really do. There are a few of them in Cape Town, and speak to your veterinarian. Your veterinarian will explain to you exactly what that is. And I would say to you that you might be looking at a change of diet for an older dog, because if there's nothing changed in that environment, and this is just a hiatic, it's just started, and is it constant? Is she doing it every day? Is it the same spot?
Sorry, I think is the same spot every day, Rini?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's like Groundhog Day. That's repetitive behavior. That is a little bit of senility. But what I would say to you is that if you want her to stop doing it, all you need to do is get some surgical spirits, pull back the soil, spray the surgical spirits underneath it, then pull the soil back over and allow her immediate access to it. She will smell that the soil has been disturbed. That's what a rodent does, and that's how they detect their presence. So she'll smell that, and she'll go to investigate it. And then she'll pull back the soil, as they do, to have a deeper sniff, and she'll get a little nose full of surgical spirits. And that will temporarily interfere with her sense of smell, and she'll pull her head away really quickly. And the idea of digging in that particular area is off limits. And will she go and dig in other areas? No. They rather accept that if it's there, then there's a probability it's everywhere else. So, darling, I'm not doing the gardening today. Someone's sewerage has leaked into our garden. So they walk away and leave it. What I would say to you is that look at having someone come in and have a look at the stage she's at and how she's coping with where she's at. And that, I think, would play a major role as well. So it's a duality of things. I think you need to speak to your veterinarian about the diet. And I equally think that it'd be a good idea to have someone pop around. You can contact me if you like. I'll discuss it with you and we'll figure out exactly why she's doing what she's doing.
Okay, John, thank you so much. Rini, I'm putting it back to my producer. If you would like to chat directly to John Fall for further advice, please just ask Amy to pass your details on to John and we'll gladly facilitate that conversation. John, as always, such an interesting conversation. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.